I have to be honest with you, when Jesus asks, "Why are you afraid?" I have to resist the urge to throttle him through the page. To angrily cross-question this lovely man peacefully sleeping through a monster storm on a glorified canoe, to grab him by the neck and say, "Are you joking right now?" Why am I afraid? Well, to begin with, rage and despair are spreading like an airborne disease, and people are dropping like flies. My wife was at a Heritage Society event the other day that nearly broke out into a fist fight. The Heritage Society. Like the lovely, kindly old museum downtown where we store all the old houses we have somehow managed not to demolish yet. Some of the lovely old souls who frequent Heritage Society daytime events almost went to the mattresses during a Q&A after a presentation. Imagine that lead on KHOU. Fisticuffs on fixed incomes, tonight at 6. Suicides are spiking, people are losing themselves, and painkillers and alcohol. Randomly furious young men practice the satanic liturgy of mass murder on what seems like a monthly basis. And as a result, people are now swaggering around with guns on their hips or thrown across their shoulders like Pat Garrett conjured out of some old Marty Robbins song. At the grocery store, I feel like an extra on Gunsmoke or High Noon, that hapless guy who picks just the wrong moment to scamper across Main Street before a gunfight breaks out. Just the other day, I was on campus at Rice, and a car backfired on the inner loop, and people in the Brockstein Pavilion were hitting the floor and elbow crawling behind the counter. Coffees went flying, and the cashier had scampered into a supply closet. Why am I afraid? I'm afraid because we live in a giant concrete swamp that fills up like a dang bathtub every summer so that people's cherished photos float down the street and forklifts stack waterlogged cars like Jenga pieces out on Highway 71 and everyone gets to make new friends at the extended stay. And the more Houston becomes all bayou and no city, the less anyone seems to know what to do about it. Last August, we were all digging friends and neighbors out of life and death devastation. We're being dug out of devastation by our friends and neighbors. And it'll be August again soon, and that's just not the kind of thing you shake off, you know? So every time it rains, I get scared. And this is Houston. It rains a lot. So sometimes I want to say to Jesus, you could maybe take a nicer tone, right? Like we are 9 billion sentient water balloons wandering around in a world full of needles and sharp corners, and Jesus wants to know why we're afraid? Isn't it obvious? I'm squishy, and the world is hard. The people who I love are squishy, and the world is hard. I am afraid because there are folks out there who lost the birth lottery, and they're being burst on the needles and hard corners of life so that I can feel safe and prosperous. And by the way, that's not a situation that usually ends well historically. I expect that the disciples on that boat might have apprised Jesus of these basic facts of mortality. But honestly, they just didn't have time to respond to Jesus' biting indictment because suddenly everything was already astonishingly, mystifyingly okay. The storm was gone, and the seas were still as mirrored glass. Who then is this that even the winds and the seas obey him? Given this sudden and unexpected calm, it might be better to understand Jesus' words not as, "How dare you be afraid," but maybe rather as, "Why are you so faithless?" Because that is a pretty decent answer or question that I have no good answer for, and you don't either. Remember that the disciples, they didn't just wake Jesus up when the storm hit. They woke Jesus up and promptly accused him of not caring about their plight. Their first words to him were, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" And the suddenly calm seas underline Jesus' answer to their question. Yes. Yes, Jesus does care that we are perishing. Of course, Jesus knows that we are squishy and the world is full of sharp edges. The disciples' faux pas was not being afraid of the storm, but their assumption that Jesus was indifferent to their plight. And I literally do this all of the time, and I expect that you probably do too. Suffering is bad enough, but I am always inclined to think that I am suffering alone. I expect God's indifference. I expect God to be deaf and blind to the dangers of my frail condition, despite ample evidence to the contrary. I cross-examine God as though he were not already in the thick of the winds and the seas and the waves, securing a path for my flourishing and growth. I am so quick to declare Jesus negligent. I'm so quick to forget all of the times that Jesus has been faithful to me. See, a wickedly short memory for God's saving love is the curse of human existence. Years ago, I began keeping a daily journal, in part because I just wanted to remember. I wanted to remember how afraid I have been, the worries that I have fervently prayed about, and how often the source of my fears was relieved and the Gordian knot untangled. Looking back through my journals, I realize that Jesus has a pretty good batting average. I just forget how often I have been held and supported and cared for and carried through and shielded and protected and guided. The truth is sometimes I don't even recognize when I am being held or supported or cared for or carried through. And my oblivious forgetfulness makes me reproachful toward God. When the next wave of fear hits and the waves rise up again, faithlessness and forgetfulness are close at hand when we are sore afraid. So here's the deal, my friends. Here is the deal. We are sentient water balloons stumbling blindly through a world of needles and sharp corners. And we are in love with other sentient water balloons also stumbling through that same world. And there is no way to live in this world and not be terrified. It is not our terror that wounds Jesus. Jesus is hurt by our propensity in our terror to forget that we are loved and cared for by God. Jesus is hurt by our tendency to remember when our balloon has been punctured, but forget all of the hundreds of times that it was not. We string together 5 traumatic memories and we let 100 blessed salvations slip through our fingers like so much sand. Our forgetfulness is what embitters us, not our fear. And our work is not to erase fear, but to steward a beatific memory, to dwell on the unexpected salvations, the gifted victories, the sighs of relief. Because it is those memories, those gifts of grace that ground our Christian faith. And a well-curated, beatific memory is also what allows us to go out and preach the gospel of God's wide-open arms to this bitter and fearful world without being flippant about all the very good reasons that people have to be afraid. So hear me now. Do not reproach yourself or anyone else for being afraid. Jesus certainly does not do that. Instead, cross-examine your temptation to make meaning out of that fear, to assume that your fear discloses something cruel and true about God. Because as the disciples found out when they roused Jesus from his slumber, God is always, already, in the middle of that storm, snatching peace from the jaws of despair.